Motorcycle Man. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 470 of the Motorcycle Man podcast. I am Ted, your host, here in the V-Twin Cafe, over in the corner booth, as usual. We got a great, interesting story for you today. Welcome back. I appreciate you being here. Today, we're diving into the wild, musical, and magical world of Susie, the Cycle Witch. Now, the rock opera that blends fantasy, horsepower, and heart. We're joined by members of the creative team who helped shape the story, the music, the voices, and the celebration that surrounds it. Buckle up, because this one's going to be an interesting ride. But before we get into that, the Motorcycle Man podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now, they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to ScorpionUSA.com. And Wild Ass Seats. You can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you are tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go to wild-ass.com and tell the real Craig Johnson your ass hurts and you need a cushion. All right. And, of course, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco riding jeans, a California riding shirt, and other tobacco gear. I can't tell you how wonderful this stuff are. You have to try it out for yourself. Your safety is worth it, so get on over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. And Viking Bags, a world leader in motorcycle luggage and one of the fastest growing companies in motorcycle parts. Luggage for whatever you ride, whatever you need, and wherever you go. All right, now, time for that interview with the cast and crew from Susie the Cycle Witch. All right, everybody, we're back, and joining me today, all the way from literally about 3 miles from where I am in Calabash, North Carolina, we've got Tom Glover, Bob Pasterzik, we got Rob Glover, and Jane Glover, correct?
That's correct.
Now I got everyone. Okay. And the whole gang is here, and we're here to talk about the rock opera, correct? Susie, yes. The Cycle Witch. So, why don't we start off with tell us who you are and what you do? You guys can pick your order. We'll start with Tom and we'll work our way across.
That's great. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having us on today.
Sure.
We're really thrilled about this. I'm Tom Glover. I am a retired medical device industry executive, and I spend most of my time now playing music and playing golf.
Oh, okay. Of course, golf is the other evil thing aside from music, but go ahead.
Very, very addictive.
Yeah. How about you, Bob? Bubba. Sorry, Bubba.
Bob. I'm Bob Pasterzik, also known as Bubba. I'm retired from Verizon. I retired as a distinguished member of the technical staff. And
distinguished, no less.
Yep, distinguished member of the technical staff. So, but right now I golf. I go deep sea fishing and play some music.
Okay. So deep sea fish. So you've added another hobby that steals money out of your pocket. Okay. So
yeah. Well, luckily, I have a friend with a boat who will take me out. So it's not as bad as owning a boat.
All right, Rob, your turn.
Yeah, my name is Rob Glover. I worked about 40 years in the pharmaceutical industry, retired now, and dabble in real estate a little bit. That's mostly my poison.
Oh, no golf or deep sea fishing or music for you?
Little music. They suckered me into banging some spoons around, so that's in a couple songs, but not really from musical end.
Oh, okay.
He's known as Mr. or Professor Spoons.
Okay. Now, did you go to any special school to learn how to play the spoons?
Well, I like to tell people when I meet him, I did go to 4 years to the Appalachian School of Spoon Arts, but then I get off that. Not really. I could bang two pieces of wood together as good as anybody, I guess.
Jane, your turn.
My name is Jane Glover. I'm Tom's wife. I was spent 50 years in the pharmaceutical industry, and I'm retired now. And I was the administrative person for this rock opera, and I spend my time just relaxing now that I've been retired.
Okay, so no golf or deep sea fishing or anything like that, real estate for you either, huh?
No, not yet.
Okay, just so you know, I live near a golf course, and I end up with these in my yard all the time. All right, so listen, so Susie the Cycle Witch, when did that, feel free, anybody can grab the question, so how did the idea for Susie the Cycle Witch first spark to life, and what were the earliest conversations like between the team on this, you know, like what elements of the story were non-negotiable from day one?
Well, let me kick it off. We'll go as far back as 1973 when a couple of buddies and I were sort of doing things related to the motorcycling. I'd occasionally go and do some dirt bike riding, and some other buddies would do cross-country trips, and we'd all get together and talk about some of these crazy people that we met, you know, while we were doing these hobbies. And one of the stories that came out of it involved a woman who had a sidecar on her motorcycle, and she was an interesting character. And after a couple of beers, we started writing songs and singing about her and some of her cronies.
Wow.
So that was in 1973. So since, you know, we wrote probably about six songs. We didn't have enough to fully fill out the story, but we locked those away for almost 50 years, and the rest is history, which we'll tell you about in a minute.
So tell us who is Susie the Cycle Witch?
Susie is an amalgam. She's a combination of many people that we've all met over the course of time.
Right.
Our Susie started out as just pretty much mischievous character, and she sort of bridges between being mysterious, mischievous, and being evil. So she's somewhere bridging those three areas.
Okay. Now, when you look back at the earliest drafts or the concept notes of this, what parts of Susie's world changed the most, and which parts stayed exactly as originally imagined?
Yes, Susie was originally a college-age woman who was into Mother Nature, was into Woodstock-type stuff back at that time. And she really evolved. She had 50 years to mature, pretty much in my brain. And 50 years later, she sort of blossomed as this evil witch, if you will.
Ah, okay. Wow. Now, how much of the creation of this, all of you here with me today, Bubba and Rob and Jane, how much did you guys have involvement in the creation or even the development of the story?
Let me just say, going back 50 years, Tom and I growing up in the same house, I've been listening to this music, to these songs, really for 50 years on and off. So
really?
Did I have anything to do with the creation of it? No, I didn't, other than maybe throwing a pillow at him or something, saying to, you know, turn that stuff off. I'm tired of listening to it. But I was there at the inception of the whole idea, I guess, and the music of it all.
All right. Great.
Yeah. And then as a performer, you know, we just took what Tom gave us to work with, and we kind of added a little personality here and there. You know, you change the voice for a character or something, but you know, most of it is basically what Tom provided to us as an outline. So,
Jane, did you have to like keep these guys in line during the whole creation of this whole thing, or even currently?
Yes, then and now. Yes. Yeah, so, as Tom said, he wrote this over 50 years ago. Yeah. You know, at the end of high school, and then during a recent move, found a lot of the pages, and the songs traveled. I don't know how many times we moved. They were in storage, and they came to light 50 years later. And he, you know, wrote some additional songs. And yes, I've had to keep all these guys in line from time to time.
How many rewrites did you have to stop? Because I know how this goes. I mean, you start working on something, you're like, yo, wait a minute, you know what we should have done there? And then you go back and you do the rewrite. And then it ends up rewriting several times. Did that happen?
Oh, many, many times. I'm going to take a guess and say each song was probably rewritten probably 5 to 10 times. But I also have to add on to something that Bubba mentioned. Everybody in the let's call it Team Susie, contributed to the betterment of this music. And it's, I'm not just saying that, but Bubba's being a little bit humble. He played several roles in this rock opera. He played everything from a gas station attendant to writer to a number of different individuals. So he had to develop personalities and for all these characters. So he's being a little bit humble. Everybody contributed.
Wow. Now let's talk about some of the characters, for example. The characters in Susie the Psycho Witch, they kind of got this distinct feel to them. I mean, how did each of you contribute into shaping Susie, the other main character who is Ryder, and the rest of the cast?
Bubba, do you want to take this?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, again, it was also the band and the way they played the music that helped shape the character for that song.
Yeah.
You know, like we had their cousin, Rich Glover, who played guitar, and you know, some of the influence that he had with his guitar was amazing, and it kind of helped you as a character feel the music and come up with how that song was supposed to be.
Okay. Now, here's an interesting question for you. Was the music first, or was the story first?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I think the story really came first. The story came out of a number of conversations over that 50-year period of time. Once a year, I used to get together with some of my high school buddies on the Outer Banks. And every time that we would meet, all of them would tap me on the shoulder and say, you got to get the Susie thing done. The story is just too good, and this is what I think you should do with it. So it really evolved over a 50-year period of time with not only the Team Susie band contributing to it, but a whole bunch of guys who were around at the origin of Susie helped contribute to it also. You know, and now that we've got the videos out, I've got friends who have said, hey, you know what? You should have showed her legs a little bit more. Right? Am I wrong?
How many times did somebody say, you know, we need to add another character?
Oh, boy. Rob started this off. Rob, you want to share that story?
Yeah, no. I think it was just, it went through a natural evolution. And, you know, the more personalities that you get involved, the more personalities you want to see, you know, it grow and everything. And really good part is, like, I don't know how Bubba, you know, developed so many voices. I think he played, what, 3 or 4 different male characters in it, and each one had a different voice, even to the point where he was singing differently for all of them. But Bob, how did you develop so many voices for personalities for these guys?
Again, I mean, it happened naturally. Like, for instance, the Hot Rod Kid, I do both the voices in that. But Tom, you know, was playing his guitar and said, you know, kind of said, okay, this is the character that you're going to be singing. And it just came out naturally that it was like a higher voice for the gas station attendant. And then when it came to the Hot Rod Kid, it was a, you know, a deeper, angry voice. And, you know, again, a lot of it had to do with the way the musicians presented the music.
Okay. Jane, did you have any input with regard to the creation of the characters or how the characters responded or the music?
Nope, none at all.
None at all. You just are back to just with the whip, right? Just cracking the whip, get everybody going.
That was and the Excel spreadsheets.
And the Excel. You have Excel spreadsheets for this?
Oh, boy, does she.
Oh, my God. You know what happens when you bring Excel spreadsheets into any project? It's a thing what we call scope creep. Scope of the project just keeps creeping further and further away. Oh, my God. So now the music is a large part of this entire thing, okay? Now, it was obviously a collaborative process, you know, like the writers and all the musicians and the vocal talent. was how did this all coalesce and when you're building the soundtrack for this whole thing? Like, as was it one person writing the music, or was it everybody writing the music together?
So I think in the beginning, I think I was fortunate enough to have six or seven songs that we had as a base. And actually what happened over that period of time, we actually changed all of the the lyrics. We changed some of the music.
Wow.
But over a period of time, everything was changed. Only because what we did in 1973 was good, but I think today's modern audience expected a lot more, mm-hmm. and that's what really took time to do. Let me just add one thing to how complex this was, because I think it's an important piece of the question that you're asking. Jane literally had to keep track of 30 people's schedules.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
For a 4-month period of time, and part of that had to do with the creativity.
Yeah.
We needed Bubba to be here at a certain period of time to be this character. We needed Donna to do this. We needed Rich to do that. We needed people to be in certain places at certain times. So Jane did an outstanding job pulling that all together.
All right, Jane, good job. How many? Let me ask you this: how many people total were involved in this entire project?
About 30.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, did it was it like musicians, writers, everybody? Just who was involved?
Guys, help me out here. But
yeah, no, I mean, not only the core musicians, that is, the Team Susie, the band itself, but I mean, then there's a whole group of the 30 that were background voices, background singers, people who contributed different chorus lines and everything.
Wow.
To it. Even some crazy lines, like what's that one line? Like shooting fish in a barrel. We had to have my wife come in and do that one special line. So, like I say, it was a lot of people with a lot of input on it.
Wow. Yeah, so that's a hell of a schedule to try to put together, get everybody in one room at the same time.
But yeah, I also think each member of the Team Susie, like Bubba said about, Rich with his guitar skills, and Jeff is an excellent keyboard player, and Dave with the drums, they each added their own personality to some of the songs. And I think some of the songs morphed into being able to showcase some of their musical talent.
Oh, yeah. But, not only that, but you're talking about a 50-year difference between when it was first written and now, and technology was way different back then, what technology we had. So now you bring in this whole thing into a new element where you have this new technology for music, for recording and all that. So you guys did this recording all in a professional studio, correct?
We did, at a place in called Arcadia Studios in Myrtle Beach. And we've got to tell you this one story, which is pretty funny. We actually went around and started interviewing studios for this. We thought we had a really good product, but we weren't quite sure. We wanted to make sure that we had the right recording studio to help us do this, because at this point, we really didn't have anybody locked in to do the drums, to do the keyboards, etc. So we went to a number of different studios, and most of the studios recommended that we use professional musicians to do this. They thought it was complicated enough that they wanted us to do this.
Makes sense.
But then I'll ask these guys to tell the rest of the story when we paid a visit to one of the more unusual recording studios in the area.
Yeah, we went down to a recording studio in Myrtle Beach and down on Seaboard Street. For anybody who's familiar with Seaboard Street, it's got all the topless bars and tattoo places and everything. It's an interesting part of Myrtle Beach that a lot of people don't get the opportunity to see. But we go down there and, we're going to meet with the recording studio owners and the producers and stuff. And, we're going in and we figured, well, what's going on here? So we walk in and we see, as we're walking in, they have a metal detector, a wand to wand us all and everything. So they looked at us three old white guys coming in and kind of laughed at us. I guess they thought it was real musicians coming in with some background. It was three senior citizens who they looked at us through their metal detectors away and said, come on in, boys.
We've got nothing to worry about.
do you have more to add on that?
No, it was just one of the good chuckles.
Regarding the production of this, now it was, one would think that when you, when someone says rock opera, the first thing that comes to everybody's mind is that this is a stage play. So there's going to be all, it's going to be either a traveling show or it's going to be at some theater somewhere. But in this particular case, you guys have decided to make this a series of music videos that are now premiering on YouTube. So now the videos have a unique, somewhat visual identity to them. Now, what were some of the biggest creative or technical challenges you had to go through in bringing Susie's World to life in YouTube?
Well, again, we really thought we had some, we had a very marketable product, but what we need to add to the music was the visuals, the videos, if you will. And so we started interviewing cinematographers to pull the story together for us from a visual point of view. And the more we talked to them, we thought, this is crazy. These guys want $100,000 just to show up, and they want us to, you know, provide lunch and dinner for everybody. It was just way out of whack.
Yeah, no.
So Jane and I started looking for alternate technologies to do this, and it was pretty clear that one of the areas that made sense to try this out in was artificial intelligence. And I'll flip this over to Jane.
Yeah, so at one point, like Tom said, we looked at videographers to do everything from scratch, which that wasn't going to work. It was very expensive. Then we thought, okay, we can do this with stock videos. So stock videos that would be available. And then we realized that there wouldn't be the continuity of the characters.
Exactly.
So we got this one freelancer, and his company is One Way Media. And he said, have you ever thought about using AI? So he created one, and we were just shocked at how good the video was. And then he could use those same prompts to create subsequent videos with the same characters. So everything is, while the music is 100% human, the voices are human, the instruments are human, it's all AI videos, all done by One Way Media, which we've been very, very pleased with what they've been able to put together.
You know, AI, a lot of people don't understand AI, and I totally get it. But the things that can be done, especially with the video aspect of it, you watch these videos, and you have a hard time believing that these are not real people. You know, the videos give you the impression that these were actually actors out there doing the whole thing. And right now, how many videos do you have up on YouTube right now?
We have 8.
You have 8. And how many are there going to be in the series?
15.
15, okay. So now, how did the team... Well, you already basically explained how you used it, you know, decided to go the AI for the storytelling of Susie. What were the early experiences and experiments with it like?
I think the first one was just a little bit shaky because we didn't really know what we were doing. And it was, you know, it was new for the freelancer who was working on it. So what we ended up doing is Tom and I would write the screenplay basically for the song, say what the setting would be, you know, a bar in a rural setting with farm and people playing horseshoes or something like that. We would write the screenplay. He would do a storyboard. We'd go back and forth a few times with the storyboard to approve it. And then, excuse me, that would get turned into a video. And we would have 3 times to make modifications on the video. So it just like making any kind of a movie, I guess. The screenplay, the storyboard, and then the video.
So there would be like this creation and then review and then revision series that you guys would go through in creating these videos, correct?
Yes.
Wow. That must have been like very kind of frustrating at times, no?
I don't think it was frustrating. It was just, Tom and I both have a background in marketing, but, you know, medical device and pharmaceuticals is way different than
just a little.
And music, especially with AI.
Yeah.
So it was a learning process. And every day we're still learning. So we only have actually 1 video left. All the rest of them are all finished, but we just have 1 left to do.
Wow.
Let me just add 1 piece to that. So as we would get these prototype AI visuals in, we would often pass them to Rob or to somebody else to take a look at it, you know, from a clean sheet of paper sort of thing.
Sure, yeah.
So we got good feedback from the team about what would work and what wouldn't work. Recently, a couple of weeks ago, we had quite a discussion over something that I wanted to happen in the story, and the reviewing team did not. So we had quite a conversation about that.
It's like the story's written. Let's not add any more, right?
There you go.
But now, as far as it goes for the tools that were used for creating this AI, granted that was entirely up to the media company that was doing all this. But did you get familiar with these AI tools and the techniques that helped shape the final look of the videos?
No. He used the VO AI program, I guess you call it. And we never really got involved with it. We got involved in, you know, what prompts he would have to make in order to create some of the videos, but it was really out of our area of expertise.
Right. So basically you guys provided all the written information and they just turned it into the AI prompt that they needed to create the videos.
Correct. You know, what we did is, like, in the beginning, there were a couple pictures of Ryder, you know, and right. He had different hair and stuff. I happened to be at my niece's house, and her husband looked exactly the way I wanted Ryder to look. And I said, can I take a picture of your hair and send it? You know, so that's based on one person. So Tom, if we saw someone, even for Susie, we sent him the suggestions of a few actresses that we thought might be appropriate for what she should look like. So that would be our input. But as far as the actual prompts and the creation of the AI videos, we weren't involved in that.
Oh.
You
know,
a lot of the review was for continuity. Like Jane and Tom said, sometimes the rider might be a little bit different. You might have to correct that. Sometimes there might be a sidecar attached to the motorcycle. Sometimes there wasn't, and from scene to scene.
Yeah.
You know, so just a lot of it was checks for continuity that the story stayed fluid.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. Now, how long did it take to make one video?
About a month.
A month for one video. And that includes from inception through all the editing process to completed final, yes, let's print this.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Let me add to that. One of the reasons I think that we were bold enough to give this a try, because who knew, you know, a few months ago whether or not this would work. We were pretty confident because one of the people that we have a relationship with has been involved in AI since its inception. The person is the narrator in our project, and you will not see that person's name anywhere because they've asked us to keep it confidential.
Really?
But we were very, very encouraged.
Wow. See, I would think that anybody who would take part in this would want, you know, to be recognized as, you know, being part of the show. Can you share any of the behind-the-scenes moments, whether funny, chaotic, or unexpectedly meaningful, perhaps, that captures the spirit of the entire production team? No, nothing?
We've got stories.
Go ahead, Bob.
I mean, I can tell you when this really came, you know, that I really felt this was going to be a success is the band would practice at my house. I have a room above the garage, and I have, you know, a drum set and everything in there. So that's where the band would practice. And I remember I had to go downstairs. I think Donna, one of the singers, was coming to audition. So I went downstairs and they started playing Old Fashioned Voodoo, right? And this was the first time the band, as a band, played this together. And I remember standing downstairs and saying, my God, that sounds so fantastic.
Wow.
I mean, it just blew me away that for the first time, these musicians could make that song what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, like I said, it just blew me away.
It's wonderful when it comes together, doesn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I think one of the funnier moments was we were in crunch time about a year ago, and we were trying to get part of the project done, and Jane was coordinating all these 30 people's schedules and the studio time and all this sort of stuff. And she really was doing a great job managing all this. And the people from the studio were amazed at watching Jane coordinate all this stuff. So What did they say, Rob?
Yeah, no. I don't remember the exact lines, but like we said, they're in amazement about Jane with their spreadsheets and the scheduling and everything else. And they first thing they wanted to do was hire her for the studio. And the second thing was the guy says, and besides, we're going to hire you. Can you do my taxes? She's so efficient. But luckily, Jane stayed with us.
In the catchphrase, do my taxes.
Yeah.
Oh, how often did you guys get together?
Every day.
Really? Every day you got together?
Every day for how many months? Quite a while.
Well, a few months. And in the studio, we were there over 100 hours.
Oh,
so
wow, yeah.
Most of their clients would be, like, they would go there for one or two songs. But,
right.
You know, with this rock opera, it was literally 100 hours. So, you know, 1 week, the first week, Rich Glover went in and did the foundation track for the guitars. And the next week, it was Dave with the drums, and the next week it was Jeff with the keyboard, and then they layered on the vocals, and Rob came in for the spoons, and you know, each week was something different, and they would layer on different things. And with the scheduling, it was, since most of the people are retired between vacations and
golf.
Unfortunately there were some golf and some medical issues,
right.
You know, heart attacks and things like that we had to work around.
Oh jeez.
It all got put together, but we were in that studio so long, and as Rob said, the street is a little sketchy, but across the street is a Costco, and I would go every day to the studio with the musicians. It got to the point I didn't have to show my card as I walked in, because I was there literally every single day walking into Costco, you know, while they would be doing their music.
Were you guys going to the studio during the day or in the evening?
Or night. They're not going down there in the evening. What are you crazy?
No way.
A place with metal detectors, it's got to be daytime.
Oh, my God. Really? Okay.
It's got to be daytime.
You know, this particular studio during the day was a recording studio, and we'd meet all sorts of characters musically oriented that would come in and record their stuff. And then you could almost see the change at 6 o'clock at night. All of a sudden, the different sort of characters are coming out, and they would be there until 2-3 in the morning.
Oh yeah, I know that.
When the crew
raves and stuff, and
the crew would come in, sweep the floors, and then we go back again the next day. So
that's too funny.
Now, a lot of fun.
Another funny story is a quick one. One of the lines in one of the songs is when Susie separates from Ryder a little bit. One of the songs says, "I hope it wasn't my breath." And we would continually try to get the chorus to sing that. It was hard to get people to buy into that line, "I hope it wasn't my breath," because nobody understood it. But it always got a good laugh and chuckle out of everybody.
See, it's the little things, right, that just bring the memories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
it turned out it wasn't her breath.
Well, for each of you, there must have been a moment for each of you during the production when you realized, you know, this is becoming something special. Did each of you come across that?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But how long into the project did you realize this?
Well, I mean, again, as we were practicing every song, you know, I would turn to Tom at the end of the song, and you could tell by the look on his face, you know, what he thought that song, you know, became.
Yeah.
You know, and he would just go like, "Wow, you know, that was great. Wow,
damn.
So,
wow." But looking ahead, now, what parts of Susie's universe are you guys most excited about to expand on, either musically or narratively or visually? I mean, what aspects of this entire project do you see growing beyond what it is?
Ted, can I just answer your previous question?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think it's important to talk about the team and how well they did. And how much they contributed. But one of the funnier parts of the event was to sort of keep these guys active and mentally active and challenged a little bit. I used to write lines for them, especially Bubba. I used to write these lines that would make it a little difficult for him to sing. So the one that Bubba, do you want to do it?
Come on, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I wrote it down. So one of the lines we gave that we made Bubba sing was, "Crafty, potent pusher, potent pheromones powered me, played me like a chump, knocked me out like Ali.
pretty.
Bubba did that over and over and over and over again. He finally got it right.
It was impossible.
Oh my God!
Hats off to him.
Yeah. Now, was this like? Did you like hand everybody like the lyrics or whatever the day of the session, or is this, did they have time to actually work on it?
I think they had time to work on it. They actually suggested a number of changes, which worked out really well. So it was helpful to get the stuff to them in advance.
Right. Meanwhile, Jane is going, no more changes.
Oh, exactly.
So going on to my next question was about Susie and the whole project and the whole universe of this whole thing. How much is it going to expand in any form, whether musically or visually?
I had some young people look at it. When I consider young, I'm saying like 30s, whatever age group that is today. But what they thought would be really good if Susie could ever be turned into like a comic or a cartoon to give it a different appeal. And I guess that's where younger people's minds are today.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, something like that.
They enjoyed the music. They liked the videos as they were, but they thought that'd be another good avenue to go.
Wow, that's pretty
interesting.
So
maybe we can have Jane and Tom change something and go from, you know, we're up to 1 million views now on YouTube, maybe go to, you know, 2 million or 5 million, who knows?
Well, right now I see that your videos, you're getting some, I mean, you've got an 8 up there right now, and you're getting a lot of views for all of these videos. It's pretty interesting. Are you happy? Are you happy with the reception that your videos are getting right now?
Woo! Holy mackerel. Jane, you want to jump in?
Yeah, so on Facebook and Instagram, we actually hit 1 million views yesterday. And it's been out since January 1st. The songs have been out, much to our surprise. New Year's Eve, we woke up and we found out that the songs were streaming on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartMusic, everything.
Wow.
On New Year's Eve. So we were thrilled about that. And then the first video hit on January 5th. So 1 million views in just that short time.
That's crazy.
We're blown away. Wow. And we're getting good views on YouTube where the videos are.
Yeah, that's something. So I do assume that there is, everything's copywritten and published, correct?
Yes.
Good. Excellent. That's good to hear. I don't want to hear, you know, it's things like, oh, no, we're doing this. There's no copyrights on any of this. That'd be bad. That'd be very bad. So I have a great question for you, and this is going to be very interesting for you. I'd like to hear your response. Any plans or thoughts about making this a live-action stage play?
Wow. It's amazing that you say that, because we had a discussion well over a year ago with our attorney, one of the attorneys that we use, and a few other people.
Right.
And that was their first recommendation. Don't do the video thing. Go do the off-Broadway thing or that, you know, some other avenue that they thought it would be more effective there. But that definitely came out from a number of people.
Oh, of course. I mean, the production would be a little more elaborate, and it would require scripting, obviously. Mm-hmm. You would have to write the stage play, first of all. I mean, based on everything you've done already. But it's actually really fantastic. I'm very super impressed with all the videos themselves. And again, I still can't get over that this is just AI, all of it. It just blows me away, actually.
Yeah, you know, one other thing that I'd like to add in here is, you asked the question about when did we know that this was going to be successful, or when did we know this was going to be pretty exciting? I really think it was New Year's Eve. The band actually was playing a gig, New Year's Eve gig, and as Jane said, you know, that night, you know, we got home and we realized that Susie was breaking. You know, it was almost like in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Wow, my record's on the radio. How did that happen?
Wow.
For me, that was the moment.
That's amazing that this whole thing has taken on such a life of its own. Geez, I mean, really. Hey, listen. Okay, so I have some rapid fire questions for you. Now, I didn't send you these earlier to review, but these are rapid fire questions. Any one of you can answer. It requires only like, you know, one or two word answer, or maybe just a one sentence answer. So you guys ready for these?
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. favorite Susie character to voice or write? I stumped you right away on the first one.
The gas station attendant was my favorite voice.
Yes.
All right. Number two, most underrated moment in the rock opera.
In the barrel.
I'm
wall
sorry.
Wall of death.
What's the barrel? Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
The ball. What did it say that again? One more time.
Wall of death.
The wall of death.
The motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wall all of right. Death. During production, coffee, tea, or pure adrenaline?
Pure adrenaline.
any adult beverages?
No, I was very disappointed in that.
Really? Bubba raises his hand right away. There was no booze, yeah. Damn it.
Where we practiced, I had a full bar set up, and no one ever touched it.
No way. Well, I guess.
I swear to God, no one ever touched it.
Jane wouldn't let us near it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you're right. Jane did sit there protecting it.
You know, it's funny because you think if this was like maybe, let's say, 30 years ago, it would have been a different story, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was like, oh, what do you mean? The cooler is empty.
Age,
what's
you know,
going
on? Everybody's got to remember you can only drink so much or not at all, depending on what kind of medications you're taking. So it kind of balances everything off at this age.
Oh, that's pretty. You know, it's funny. It reminds me of a story where Larry Hagman, the actor Larry Hagman, many years ago, mm-hmm. Would hang out with Fonda. Henry Fonda, and in early years, he said that when they got together with their motorcycle group, they would get together and they'd talk about what kind of drugs they were doing. And as they got older, then the conversation switched to what kind of medications they were taking.
That's the truth.
Okay, this is number four. What song that was the hardest to nail?
Seven.
Yeah. Bubba, do you want to explain a little?
Yeah.
No, it's just the timing of it and everything. And I think that's the one where it also goes into it. It changes from like a rock song to a reggae beat.
And right? This was the song titled Sleep. Is that correct? No. Oh, the song Seven.
Song Seven, yes.
Oh, okay. Which is weird because the song Seven is actually Act Six.
Yes. Right.
That's what threw me off half the time.
So I'm like, wait a minute.
And that was accidental. It wasn't meant. It wasn't on purpose.
Okay, number five, the song that surprised you the most.
Pigtail Penny. I mean, it was something even that a radio guy was to the launch party, and he put it right on his radio station down in Myrtle. Also, it became like a real popular thing.
No kidding.
Great song, but just curious the way it rose so quickly.
All right. Number six, funniest outtake from the recording sessions. Yeah. See, I know when the times that I've gone into the studio, we always save the outtakes because it's something that we'd listen to later and have a good laugh over. Did you guys do that?
We had 50 years of outtakes.
No.
And blooper reels.
Well, that's it. That's what I'm saying. The blooper reels were funny to hang on to those. Did you guys do that? Did you save them?
We got a few videos that, we probably have to get permission from the folks to use them. But, maybe we should take a look at that.
They absolutely should. Absolutely. You know, this could be another addition to Susie the Cycle Witch YouTube videos as sort of like during production kind of thing you did. Okay, number seven, one word to describe Susie. Each one of you can respond to this.
Evil.
Confusing.
Mischievous and misunderstood.
Ah, well, it's like two words. That's good. But you, Tom, you got one?
See, sexy.
Oh, okay. Well, he goes right there. That's good. One word to describe Ryder, the character Ryder.
Faithful.
Ah, okay.
Heartbroken.
Really? I guess so. Yeah, because what I've seen in the videos, that kind of it works. That works. All right.
Perseverance.
Yeah, he was that. That's for sure. All right. Now here goes another next question. Favorite line from the show.
I hope it wasn't my breath.
And finally, If Susie had a theme snack, what would it be?
A theme snack.
Devil's food cake.
There you go. See? All right. Now you're thinking. All right, guys. Listen,
another famous line that we all missed on through the whole time we've been with you, and really has been one of the themes of Susie, is the phrase "sleep is for suckers."
Yeah, explain that a little bit.
It was written on the mirror, if you remember, and everything else. So
yes,
that's become a pretty famous line.
Yeah. Now, did you guys have T-shirts made up for that?
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, there's T-shirts out there with that phrase, so it's pretty good. Sleep is for suckers.
Wow. That's awesome. I tell you what, the videos, I really enjoy the videos. I think they're really great. If you haven't had a chance to watch any of these videos and get involved in the Susie Cycle Witch community, check it out on YouTube. But before we go any further, before we close up for the interview, what's next for the entire Susie team? What's next for you guys?
The Grammys.
Okay. Hey, you never know, right? You never know.
We're going to do our best to figure this. We figured out a lot of stuff being non-musically, not having a musical background. We figured out a lot of things. We might figure out how to get into the Grammys.
It's just like, you need a lot more views. That's for damn sure.
We're working on it.
Do you guys have another project in the tube?
You know, we've actually got I'll call it the foundation of a Susie 2, the next stage of Susie,
okay,
which sort of goes back 100 years, not 50 years, 100 years. So we might take a look at that. As Rob mentioned, we're going to take a serious look at comics. I mean, we've had a number of people suggest very strongly that we look at comic books for this.
No. Hey, you know what? Anything is worth a shot. You don't know until you do it. Any closing words about Susie the Cycle Witch and your whole production and what's to come?
Go ahead, guys.
Bob, did you have anything? I didn't want to.
No, I just wanted to say, you know, how proud I was of the people that, you know, stepped up, you know, like Lily learned to play the bass during this production and took over some of the bass playing for the live show, you know, and you know, Donna, who was originally only going to be Pigtail Penny, she stepped up to become Susie. Lily filled in as Pigtail Penny. So, I mean, a lot of people stepped up and changed roles that really did a great, great job. And I think they should be, you know, noted. So,
all right. Rob, you have anything?
Yeah, no, just, I mean, kind of sentimental or whatever. I'm proud of my brother and Jane for really finishing up a 50-year project. You got to remember, it's something I heard down in our parents' basement 50 years ago. And, you know, he dug it back out, you know, reworked it, and here it is today with over a million views, which to me is amazing. So,
yeah,
great
absolutely.
Story. And Susie's a great story, and the story of how it evolved is a great story.
Jane?
I'm just thrilled that we've gotten to this stage. You know, a year ago, I'm taking a look at the pictures that we did a year ago. I never expected that we'd have all these videos out by now. So, you know, as Bubba said, it was a great group effort. The musicians were great. The vocalists were great. And all the people that were, you know, doing the chorus and the behind the scenes work. It was a great group effort. And it just goes to show in retirement, you can do anything that you set your mind to.
That's right. That's right. How about you, Tom?
I can't say thank you enough to all the volunteers. Again, these are all basically amateur musicians and chorus people that, as Bubba said, they took a risk. They did a fantastic job. They knocked the ball out of the park. I can't thank them enough. Sure, the lyrics and the music are important, but the team efforts were really special.
Excellent. All right. Well, how can people learn more about Susie the Cycle Witch?
Yeah, so Susie the Cycle Witch is on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, all at Susie the Cycle Witch. Same address on all of them.
Oh, great.
So we have shorts posted a couple times a week, and a new video comes out every 2 weeks.
Excellent. Wow, that's really good stuff. Listen, I think you guys should be very proud of what you put together here. I think it's a really cool thing. I wish you all very much success with this.
Thank you, Ted. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. You guys were great.
Glad to do it.
Okay. Yep, great to be here.
Thank you.
All right, that wraps up our deep dive into Susie the Cycle Witch. Huge thanks to Tom, Rob, Bubba, and Jane for sharing the stories, the laughs, and the magic behind the scenes. Now, if you haven't watched the rock opera yet, head on over to their YouTube channel and experience the world they've built. Now, you can learn more about Susie the Cycle Witch by heading on over to their Facebook page, for Susie the Cycle Witch, and Instagram, and, of course, the YouTube channel. You'll check it all out. All the links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Hey, don't forget to go on over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel and watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you'd also please like and subscribe, that would be a tremendous help to both the channel and, of course, to the podcast. Hey, get a copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled, now direct from me on the Motorcycle Men website and save nearly $8. Of course, it's still available on Amazon and the audiobook is on Audible, but you can still get it from me if you want, and I'll even sign it for you. Thanks for joining me, boys and girls, here on episode 470 in the V-Twin Cafe in the corner booth where we talked with the folks from Susie the Cycle Witch. So thank you very much for joining. So for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening, and remember, kids, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safely.